Morning, buds.
Okay, all right, Steve, you bring it in and you know, you do the introduction. Use your chest. Bring us some energy. You know, get people excited to talk about or hear about running. Okay?
From down low the diaphragm?
Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1, pause. Welcome to the Running Buds podcast. I am one of your hosts, Steve McNamee. My other equally as uninformed and off-the-cuff host is Charlie Lambrix. Charlie, are you ready to talk running?
Yes, and I resemble that comment.
Yeah, I know. We both do. I've been thinking about running in the heat, and I'm just like receding from running, Charlie. I don't feel the same about running as I did like 6 months ago when it was nice and cool. So I'm hanging on by a thread, but I'm ready for this.
I feel like myself and most of the people I'm talking to, other runners, are just shells of who we were in the spring. Do you remember all the fire and fury I had going into Glass City?
I liked that guy.
Yeah, I miss that guy. Well, he was a little intense.
What's frustrating to me is a lot of my little group, they're still like headlong into running, and they're sick of hearing me complain, I'm sure, about how hot it is. But those guys go headlong into this and they do not miss a beat. And meanwhile, I'm a shell.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know anyone that's running well out here. So
no good. What's happened to us, but
we've got a lot of excuses not to be running well. I think I complained about the air quality last podcast, so I won't talk too much on that other than it's still just continuing. It was raining for the first time in months recently, Steve, and it smelled like somebody just poured water on a campfire. Literally, that's what it smelled outside in the rain. So that just tells you what's going on with our air quality, which is not conducive to outdoor activity, let alone running.
Nasty.
I said I wouldn't talk about it. Then I spent 15 seconds continuing to complain about it. But
that's okay. You're entitled. You're entitled to complaints. But we go through ebbs and flows, don't we, Charlie?
We do. And it was an ebb in the spring. And it's a flow in this fall. I wish I followed your plan of no marathon in the fall. Maybe not.
Oh.
I'm going to do St. George. I'm going to love it. It's not going to be my fastest time. It's definitely not going to be my slowest, though. So I'm just going to do it. I feel like I'm actively going through the motions of training for a marathon. Not as much mileage, not as many workouts, but I'm doing the long runs. I'm getting enough mileage to, you know, run an okay race, and I think I'm okay with that at the moment. I think.
Don't you sign up sometimes knowing that you're not there mentally, but you will be there mentally? I mean, once you begin training, once you sign up.
Yeah, and then just time goes by, and I'm like, I'll get there eventually. Now I'm looking at only, you know, even want to count the number of weeks. I think it's 7 weeks away, and it's like
that's getting close.
Yeah, it's like I'm gonna get into this training here eventually. But
I'm about to hit my stride, but no.
Now, mentally, up top in the head, upstairs, Steve, is this weighing on you at all that you're not running as well, or are you just telling yourself it's summer? This is what happens when the fall comes. I'll literally find my stride again.
Do you know the funny thing is, Charlie, that this seems to happen to me every year. And every year I go into summer just thinking, okay, I'm not going to wilt. I'm going after this. I'm going to acclimate. I'm going to have a great summer. I'm going to stay in shape. I'm not going to lose a step. And something happens throughout the summer. I don't acclimate. This is every year. And there comes a point, it's usually about now in August, where I just think, that's it. I'm done. I'm not the person I used to be, and I'll never be that person again. And my days are over. And then magically, every year, hopefully it happens this year, but every year, right about September 1st, I'll go for a run when it's like 58 degrees, and I will be the person that I used to be, like nothing ever happened. But I've lost 3 months of my life just why do we sweating my guts out.
Why
I don't
do we
know.
Get amnesia every single year? We forget that it's hard to run in the heat.
I know.
You can't be on all the time. Even professionals, no matter the sport, have an off season. Why can't we? Just the fact that we're still getting out there and getting mileage is commendable. So,
I hope, what a great point.
I hope those listening don't think we're just complaining and that they're using us an example of, like, yes, if you're feeling the same way, just let's all remind ourselves cooler weather will be here eventually and we will get back into that rhythm, that groove. And this is just how it is this time of year.
Yeah.
And you know, before we know, it's going to be cold. It's late August already. September and October will be here before you know it, and it's going to feel great, and we're going to be running in the leaves, and we're going to wish that we had another race to do.
I agree. And the funny thing is, you heard what I just said before, and I can objectively articulate this cycle that I go through, and I know that I'll be back. It just eventually my mind takes me to a place where I just start to doubt that I'm going to come back, that I'll be what I was. And that's the frustrating thing, is that objectively I know what's going to happen and I believe what's going to happen, but there's just always that doubt.
All right. I know I know what song we're ending today with.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm already curious, 'cause I had nothing. So I'm glad that I inspired music within you.
Yes. Let me write it before I forget. And I'm 90% sure of the band, but you know, I'm not going to look it up.
Okay.
All right.
I'll see if I can come to the rescue.
I had something, I learned something interesting or heard about an interesting runner that I actually work with, and I had to reach out to this person, not face to face, just through like our instant messenger through work. I was told that this person's a runner and that they ran 3,000 miles the year prior. I was like, well, we've got a little running club here at work. We got to invite this guy to lunch runs and make plans with him and et cetera.
Yeah, and get him into the fold.
And this is a self-described world's most boring runner. This person does 6 10-mile runs a week, 50 weeks a year, never races. 3,000 miles a year, 6 days a week, always 10 miles, no more, no less. He's just this robotic, methodical, boring runner, never races.
That is very difficult to wrap my head around. Now, does he run with people at all?
I don't think
so. That you
know
of? Okay.
We've invited him, and he didn't seem interested. He did have an understandable excuse that it's hard for him to work, run, and then be able to work again after running, which makes sense. So he's
okay,
fine doing the lunch run thing. I don't know, but I haven't even, like I said, I haven't met this person face to face yet. I just heard he did this, so I reached out and I found out that he is in fact the world's most boring runner. And
self-described.
I don't know this person. I can't even remember their name, as a matter of fact, but. And I think he's still an outlier, but I feel like there are a lot of people that don't like racing, which is the opposite of us, Steve. We run to race. That's like the payoff. That's like why we do it. We're trying to improve our, we like races, but that's not the case for everyone. In fact, I think a lot of people have race day anxiety or just get anxious. Thinking about running as a competitive sport as opposed to just something to do to stay in shape. And I haven't talked to this guy enough to know if that's the case with him, but I'm guessing it is. Do you have any race day anxiety, or does, we were talking earlier how asking if you were having any kind of anxiety or trouble with the fact that you're not running as well. Where are you at from like a mental state coming into a race or when you can't quite get in shape?
Yeah, what an interesting question, because mentally when you go to a start line, you can be in a great place or a terrible place, and it doesn't always follow. The race doesn't always follow where you are mentally, but yeah, you can just bring so much baggage to the line. Mentally, I would say in general, I don't suffer from a lot of anxiety, but Charlie, I think some of that, and maybe you'd agree, is just the fact that we do a lot of races, and not all of the races that we do, we invest ourselves in, if you know what I mean. You don't have that stake, you know, that skin in the game on so many races. So the more
you're less invested in some.
I mean, let's just do a round number. You do 12 races a year. That's once a month. Not every race is going to be your A race. And sometimes you're just racing to see where you're at, and you kind of show up like,
let's ignore the ones that you're less interested or less invested.
Let's go after the marathons then.
Just focus on your A race, your big enchilada. This is your goal that you've been spending months training for.
Well, don't you think so? So the marathon, though, the marathon, you have so much time invested and so much heart and soul, all those miles that you've put in, those months of races that you could have been doing, but instead you've been training for a marathon, and perhaps at the expense of 5Ks and 10Ks and shorter races, you've invested so much in a marathon. How can you not show up with just a little bit of anxiety? Mm-hmm. To say the least. I mean, do you experience that in a marathon as opposed to, say, a 5K or a 10K?
I feel like I have low grade anxiety throughout training, and it's getting worse and worse as I'm getting older, and it's getting harder and harder to PR. Anxiety that my training's not sufficing, anxiety that I'll get injured. When everything is going perfectly, and this is a good clear-cut sign that training is going well, I start to worry about what the weather might be race day. I start having dreams that I'll forget my shoes, these various things, but it's never anything debilitating. And race morning, when all looks good, like it did this past marathon, Glass City Marathon, I'm usually excited. I'm ready to get to the finish line and be good. But I get how some people can have anxiety. First of all, I think a lot of people are just afraid to test themselves, to challenge themselves, just to push yourself and potentially fail is an option. And I think that that's too much for a lot of people. And that's something that that is what also can make running and racing great, because when you overcome that and then you surprise yourself, it's such a reward. But it only comes by actually putting yourself there. And we've seen it. Like the guy I mentioned, he just doesn't race. He just doesn't mess with it. And I don't know his motivations, but I'm kind of projecting that. Or there's a lot of people I know that just kind of sabotage their race. Like they'll stay out late drinking the night before a race.
But that's a good way to get, let's be honest. But like, oh, I'm not going to do well anyway.
Yeah, or they'll build in, or how many of these annoying runners that they'll just kind of give you their laundry list of excuses of why they probably won't do well before the race even begins.
Oh, my gosh.
Including the two hosts on this podcast. This podcast. Complaining about the weather and not being able to train like they were before. We just constantly are thinking about it and having a little bit of stress regarding it. So
that is true. All good point.
What is your background in other sports, Steve? Did you do other like team sports or anything in high school or grade school?
I mean, it was pretty much cycling when I was young, and I could devote the time and energy to cycling. I never had much of an inclination for team sports, only because I just always liked doing my own thing. Didn't mean I didn't enjoy team sports when I tried it, but I always liked to measure myself against myself, if that makes sense.
That's interesting. So you were never on a baseball, soccer, football, basketball, none of the I can list more sports if you want.
As a
Anything.
kid, sure. Yeah, as a kid, sure, but
All right, let's go back there. How old, what was the oldest you were when you were on an organized like league team sport
oh
thing?
heavens, grade school.
Grade school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was grade
Okay.
school.
You never did any of it in high school then.
No, not in high school. In high school is when I did find cycling, and that's, I mean, I kind of just fell in love with that sport then, and at the expense of everything else.
Interesting. And I only bring that up, Steve, like pushing or asking if you were any of that, because I can remember seventh, eighth grade football. This is grade school, of course, and just like having so much anxiety for those games. And the big difference there between running and, football is nobody's gonna hit you when you're running. I mean, a
Right.
car when you're training, but and I would just get like almost ready to like puke before games. And this is like nobody cares, this is so small potatoes. But I never got that really with running. I wrestled in high school, and that's like as exposed as you can possibly be for competition. You're literally wearing a singlet, which leaves nothing to the imagination. So you're almost naked out there wrestling another person, and it's mano a mano. Everybody is just watching you. There's no, it's not like a football field where there's 22 people, or even basketball that's only 10, but you can't kind of just blend in when it's just you in spandex against another person in spandex. So that was always anxiety filled going into a match, just because you're out there. You can really get embarrassed or exposed, or even baseball. I played baseball growing up, and when a fly ball would get hit my way out in the outfield, my initial reaction was crap.
Were you the you were the you were the please don't hit it to me kid then?
Oh, for sure, for sure. And I wasn't good. I was not a good
Funny you
baseball
mentioned
player.
that
I
because
had catches in the outfield, and I only played until like maybe eighth grade was the last time I was in an organized baseball team. So, getting a catch, taking away somebody getting a single or double to an out, that happened a few times. I missed some, I miscalculated some, I just dropped some, but I got some in the elation of actually, feeling that ball hit the mitt and knowing, not today, sucker. You sit your ass back down in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Or dugout, whatever. That
Well,
felt, that was elation. And but that's so like quick, like literally from the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand to the me throwing it back into the infield is a matter of seconds. So it's just such a whirlwind, whereas running, it's just this slow, methodical, like it takes a long time before that start line goes off, that start gun goes off before you realize you're going to have your goal or not that day. So it's just a whole different animal.
yeah, it's funny you bring up baseball because even though I didn't play baseball, and I do remember as a kid when I did, I was scared to death to walk up to the plate just because I hated failing so much, and I was afraid of what was going to happen striking out. But I
You
did
were
coach
afraid of the
baseball.
ball. You knew with you were afraid of the ball because it
Oh,
would
not the way these kids threw. It was a
hit your.
pretty laid back. But when I was when my son was of age, I was the baseball coach around here for his team. And I, as a coach, I didn't really know that much. I tried to learn everything I could to make, the best coach I could possibly be and, help kids out that were going to be successes. But for me, it was always mental. I was always trying to coach the mental part of the game. And I'd always say things that, like you said, you didn't want the ball hit to you, or when it came, you'd say, "Oh, crap." And that was one of my things. I always say, when you're in the field, you want to beg for that ball to be hit to you. Every pitch, you're just begging for it to come to you. And that was my approach as a coach, was the mental part of the game, which I thought was really important as a coach, or when you're a kid playing, is having that confidence in yourself.
Interesting. I wish you were my baseball coach. I might have
Yeah.
done better. Maybe I would have stuck with it. I could be.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe I could have saved you a lot of wear and tear on your knees.
Yeah. Oh, God, don't go there. Oh, jeez. But then, yeah, but the thing for me for running, and I don't know if this is the story for you, Steve, but by the time I got in it, and still right now, most of my friends and family that are, well, all my friends and family that are not runners have no idea what my time is or what is even good or not in various races. And just the fact that I finish a half marathon, let alone a marathon, is an incredible accomplishment. So there's really like no outside pressure. It's all internal, you know? And
no, absolutely. So I guess the question, so question for you then. So like success in a race, that's generally going to be a PR or a high placing, correct? I mean, you can correct. Find, so what to you is the measure of failure? I mean, what is it? If you have anxiety before a race, it has to be that you're going to fail in some way. What's your failure look like?
That's a good question, because I did a race fall of 2019 that, let me do the quick math, was over a half hour slower than what I did Glass City this past spring. So I'd consider that a failure of a race.
Yeah.
And you know what? It didn't bother me that much. After the fact, it was like, not my day, whatever. And I'm not even just saying that. I really, truly, it just kind of shrugged it off and let it go. Maybe because it wasn't, you know.
Well, that's kind of the thing. That's kind of what I was getting at, though, is I have the same thing. I mean, I'll have anxiety before a race, or I'll have that sort of that fear that it's not going to go well. But I don't know what that looks like. I mean, I've had crappy races where it's like, you know, or I've been mad at myself for a few minutes, but it's never been the result of anxiety, or, you know, I mean, it's never been what I had feared was going to happened. And therefore I'm pissed. You know, it's, I don't know. It's a weird mental thing that we wrestle, that we twist ourselves in.
Here's a failure. We both had, we didn't finish a race. Now that was a lot to get over. Now that Glass City, our PR marathons, we PR'd in Glass City. I don't know if our listeners knew that or not, but in the spring we trained and ran PRs. Had that gone differently, had I hit mile 20, 21, and just kind of been pressing on the gas, but continued to slow down, and instead of ran a couple minute PR, ran a couple minutes slower than what my PR was, that is what I was in the pit of my stomach was really scaring me, or causing stress, because I just put so much work into that race, more than I ever had before. And to do all that and get slower, that would be kind of like a facing my own mortality of like, well, you're getting older and you're falling off. You're not as good at this as you used to be. You missed your opportunity to really do your best. If you would have worked this hard earlier, you know, all these things would have kind of come flooding to me. And this is what was kind of causing that baseline anxiety going into that race. But luckily it went okay.
Yeah. And it's funny that you bring up Glass City, because I had the same thought. Really on the line, I was okay. But I do remember the morning of, and the feeling of anxiety was, it came from just the fact that, okay, it's here, it's happening now, you know. And like I said earlier, there's this big build up to marathons especially. And the thing that I had been obsessed with in a way since the beginning of the year, you know, for those 4 months, it's here. It's, you know, it's before me. I have 3 hours now. 3 hours are going to define my last 4 months. And I don't see how in any way you can't feel anxiety. And it doesn't have to be running. It can be in any, like if you're taking a test, if you're, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you've prepared that much time for that small window of opportunity, you're going to feel anxiety, aren't you? I mean, isn't that just natural?
You have to. I don't know how you couldn't. I'm not wired not to.
Yeah. So it's like a stage fright. It isn't, I don't mean, I have to say, I don't even like, well, when I think about it, it wasn't even really the fear of failing or the fear of, or fear in general. It was just,
do you ever fear the pain? Just like, are you ever in the start line? And I'm like,
yes, I do.
I'm going to feel pain at a cellular level.
Yeah, that's another one, is you hope that you're able to hurt yourself enough, but not too much to put on a good show for you, you know, that you're going to be self-satisfied at the end of whatever the effort is. So yeah, that's a fair question. And that's a good, another good point to bring up in anxiety, is you know, you're going to hurt, but you want to hurt on your own terms. You don't want to hurt just because you're having a lousy day.
Yep. And there's a lot of things to be anxious about. And this is all the things that help me personally for a race. I like the pomp and circumstance. That's why I love a race. I love the big start line. Sometimes I start with the loud music a little too early before the race, but I like the build up, the gun going off, everybody in this together. I love a race that starts early and it's kind of dark in the beginning, and then the sun just comes up while it's going on. I love the crowds.
Oh, yeah.
All this stuff is great, but it's so opposite of like training. And the reason people get so much mental health benefit from running is the solitude, the quietness, the alone with your thoughts type thing. And then you do that for training, and then you show up at this race with potentially thousands of other runners and thousands more spectators, and it's just such a contrast that it's almost funny. And I could see someone being like, I don't want anything to do with that. Why would I want?
I can too. It's kind of like race horses on the day of the Kentucky Derby, you know, that those horses are up every morning with somebody on their back running around a track in the opposite direction that they're going to race on. Then suddenly one day they walk out to the track and there's all this noise, and they have to know something's going on. We're kind of the same way. We operate at that base level. Like, this is just different than what I'm used to. And the adrenaline kicks in and you're going to have a different experience than you have all those 6 a.m. runs day after day, week after week. Like you said, in solitude and silence, suddenly you're at the Kentucky Derby.
Wait, time out. You said something that I have to follow up on. Horses one direction and then they race a different direction?
That's my understanding. I'm not a horse guy, but I've heard that before, is that they will run horses in the opposite direction that they race for whatever reason, but they'll race in a different direction than they train. Again, this is an ill-informed podcast. If any horse people are out there that can dissuade me of this falsehood, then by all means, send us an email.
I love the idea of just some dude at a horse farm listening to this and be like, this guy's an idiot.
This is bullshit. Yeah. I'm not listening to these guys anymore.
Where'd he come up with this? Why would you run the opposite direction? Jeez.
I've considered doing that on the track before, only training in one direction and then racing in another. I mean, if it works for horses, why not? I'm not that much smarter than a horse.
And we're back. What was seconds for the listeners was a couple hours for Steve and I, and a couple developments since then.
Yeah,
Steve.
Number one, we need a break every now and then. This gets exhausting. But number two, I fact checked myself and Charlie. There is absolutely no evidence that horses train backwards on a track. So that's utter nonsense. I'm disturbed how easily I am led off course, and I have believed this for a lifetime. So
I'd really love to do like a deep dive and unpack some things to what led you to believe that to be true.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I just, cause there's a whole, I don't want to go off into a rabbit hole, but there's a whole list of like things that I've believed my entire life that have turned out to be untrue. I always thought like the bottom of a banana, when you eat a banana, there were seeds and I would never finish a banana all the way. And I was talked out of that, but I still don't eat an entire banana. I always leave like the last half inch uneaten because I had the idea in my head at some point that there was seeds down there that were inedible. And I have no idea of the origin, but I just, I'm easily led astray, Charlie. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. It's disturbing.
You and me both. I have an older brother. He's 4 years older. And till probably the age of 17, I realized sometimes he just lied to me. He just made things up or just said facts, which had no concrete part in reality. And still deep down, I feel like some of them are true until I'm like, oh, wait, no, that was just some crap Jason said that has no basis in reality.
But they sound good. They sound good and you buy into them, even if they're inconsequential. It's still you want to believe.
Yeah. But anyway, so horses probably run the same direction they run in a race.
I think so. Counterclockwise. That's I did a little bit of research actually. I think they just run counterclockwise and that's it. They don't
just like
no overthinking.
Yeah, so also interestingly enough, in the couple hours break we had there, I spent mostly at the playground with my son, avoiding melted chocolate ice cream from all the other kids who aren't cool like my kid. And you spent helping your kid study for his actuary exam. Is that right?
That is right. So yeah,
that's one of the more interesting things about this show. Not only are we states apart, but just in terms of where we're at in life, I'm like, you know, what, 20 years behind you?
Yeah. I just turned 49. You just turned, or I don't know. What is your age these days?
I'm 34. 30. I'm 34. So we've got a 15-year difference. But
insane.
My son was born, I was 32, though. So I imagine you were much younger when your first was born.
I was. I was early 20s. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. No problem. So we're just, I'm going down your same path. I'm just much, much later. So yeah, you haven't, when was the last time you had to hold your kids' hands to help them up the steep part of a playground? And I'm sorry, guys. We'll eventually get back to running. This is just two guys having a friendly chat at this
point. I can answer you when I took my son. He's going off to college, and I drove him to the liquor store to pick out a flavored vodka. So that I can remember. I have no memory of the playground, but we did make a liquor store run last week before we went to college. So I know what goes on there. So.
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to say some kind of like single malt scotch or something. And I was like, oh, wait, he's in college. Yeah.
Boy, I have tried. Yeah, I have tried, but that is a no-go.
What were we even talking about before?
I think we were talking about anxiety, which really dovetails nicely into the alcohol discussion. what a great treatment for anxiety. So if you want to self-medicate, you can't do it before a race, of course, but racing anxiety and how we tie ourselves up into knots. Do you remember talking about that?
Yeah. Do you think you could point at one specific race that you were most anxious for?
Yeah, I can. It was the one I dropped out of. It was Boston, the 2019 race. It wasn't that I was anxious. It was, I think that I was just overhyped. And I mean, like my mind was too deep in emotions. You know, I didn't have that sort of that calmness about myself that I like to have before a big race. You know, I try to be low key, and I think I was just all hyped up, and it ended in flames. So I think that's a kind of a substitution sometimes for anxiety. It comes out in different ways.
Here's the chicken or the egg thing. Do you think the anxiety contributed to your lack of performance, for lack of better words?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't even say it's true for me. I think it's true for a lot of people. I mean, you just deal with it in different ways. And sometimes, you know, your efforts to push it away is counterproductive. Like, you know, in my case, I just remember I was just I was just like psyched up, you know, like you see football players psyched up before a big game. That might work fine for them, but when you've got to give a continuous effort for hours on end, it doesn't work. But yeah. I mean, I think we all deal with it by maybe substituting other emotions. I mean,
that's interesting. Excitement and anxiety are so close together, like in just terms of its effect on the body, the nervous twitchiness, the elevated heart rate, the dilated pupils. Anxiety and excitement are hand in hand. And I think one of the ways I think a lot of people probably pivot anxiety is turn it into excitement. I certainly did that with Glass City. I turned it into like this determined excitement. But also your good point is you can't really do that for a marathon because you'll burn out if you're just, you know, slapping yourself in the face with pumped upness for it. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon, literally.
It's not a sprint. Yeah, but you need to have that self-control. I mean, you're going to have some emotions. That's impossible to deny yourself emotions before a big race. But it's that self-control that is the real antidote to, at its core, anxiety. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I hope I'm putting that correctly, but whatever.
Steve, you've gone this word salad, as they say, and I no you're making sense. You are
okay.
I used to have, as I'm kind of pondering now, I feel like, I don't know, sometimes I wish I could go back, you know, because I started running at 24 25 years old, and I kind of basically started at nothing. I was already sort of thin and enjoyed running, and I just kept adding mileage, and I started so low with my mileage. I didn't think it was low at the time, but it really was, and I just built up gradually. So every time I raced, I improved, and it was so exciting. And yeah, every marathon I did kept getting bigger and bigger, and I just kept doing better, and it was just pure excitement. For the Chicago Marathon, I did that about 2 years after my first ever marathon. My first ever marathon was fall 2012. Fall 2014, I did Chicago Marathon. And I just always knew I was going to PR at every race I went to in these days. And I remember picking up my packet at the Chicago Expo. And even though I co-host this podcast and you can't get me to shut up when we're on here and I'm interrupting you all the time, Steve, I'm kind of quiet and reserved in new situations or around new people or just strangers in general. So I pick up my packet. I'm just my resting B face and unapproachable demeanor. The guy who hands me the packet says, "Don't worry, man. By tomorrow or whatever, this will all be over." I remember looking at him confused. And I was like, "I'm excited for this." He's like, "Oh, okay." So, I don't know why I told you the whole backstory of me being unapproachable and
that's okay.
But
character
still, like,
development.
Yeah, I was just like, I can't wait to PR. And I used to be disappointed if I didn't PR by 5 minutes. It was just a different time now. Now I feel like I just have to kill myself for months, weeks on end, just doing these insane workouts for just negligible improvements.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm jaded.
Right. The law of diminishing returns, as they say. And that's, I think that's where we are, is we're just like, nothing's guaranteed. You can even show up in what you think is your best shape and just lay an egg or explode. And I think that's the core of our anxiety these days. At least it is for me, is that X factor, that what I can't control.
Have we ever talked about racing your future self on this?
No.
Every time you race, and especially when you PR, part of me is just sort of has, again, that same word, anxiety, about like, the faster I do this, and I know this doesn't make any sense, the faster I do this, the harder it's going to be to beat in the future. And it's just
That makes sense.
Anxiety for future self. And I remember for Glass City, I can't believe I didn't bring this up before. I just remember thinking, F that guy. You know, like, he's not here. He's not now. This is
it's his today. Problem.
That guy might never do it, but we're going to do something today. And we're going to, I don't care what he has to do. I don't care if he has to, you know, kill himself to get the beat this, metaphorically speaking, of course. And I think that was the best way to sort of approach it. Well, now I am future guy. And I'm like, damn. That was a lot of work that guy did. I go through the same thing.
I was gifted years ago a chalkboard where I can put my weekly workouts, you know, and I do that during, like, I did that during marathon training. I filled it out and it's in my basement, so I have to walk by it every day I go to, like, do anything in the basement. But there's also a list of PRs at various distances. And I decided, well, I'm not going to just put the PRs because they're getting, it's more less and less frequent. That I'm going to change the PR. So I keep it as a 12-month PR. So I have this constant reminder, like, what I've done in the last year, in the last 12 months.
That's a great idea.
It is, but it's a little bit of a, like you say, future guy. As soon as I wrote PRs, which, you know, they're coming up. Like, I had two in October last year, and it's like, ah, crap. Like, every time I go down there, you know, and I spent the first part of the year, like in January, like, oh, look at that. I've got 10 months to attack that again. And now that it's coming, it's like the bill is due. Can I beat it? Can I get close to any of those times again? And some of them are just going to disappear.
Have you
see myself. Yeah.
Have you had any expire yet? Do you just erase it at that point?
Yes, I do.
Then take whatever your most new one.
I'll do the new one. I'll always have one up there. But now I will say last year, I didn't do certain distances just because races got canceled. So a couple of them just disappeared. I just erased them. But, you know, it's still just this constant reminder of, and for me, you know, being in my mid-40s, 49, but my mid-40s. It's trying to stay sharp. It's trying not to have a major drop off. You know, it is future guy. Like you say, I'm always future guy every time I go down there, and knowing I've got to stay sharp. I've got to stay on task.
You know, there may be a lot of great podcasts and personalities have these, like, phrases that they can put on their shirts and stuff. Should ours be F future guy?
I wish it could be. We probably have F a lot of things that we've F many topics that we've covered. We tend to be disgruntled when it comes to things. F ugly race shirts. F the stuff that.
All right. Here's a question. You got to be totally honest here, Steve. Have you ever had one of these 12-month PRs that you have to erase or change to something else? Have you ever felt any sort of relief? Like, oh, I don't have to worry about doing that fast again now. It's kind of like that just seems intimidating at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a sad feeling, to be honest, Charlie. I don't know. I don't know what my emotion is. That's a good question. I like to think that when I take a step backwards, because I have done that, I've had to erase before with slower times. I like to think that I'm gonna be back. But right now, I'll say that everything I have up there is a legit PR. So, as happy as that makes me, you know, they're about to expire. So it's a constant barrage of emotions in the back of my head. Like, I mean, honest to God, every time I do laundry, like, I'll go do laundry and, you know, I walk out with a laundry basket, like, I got to run that. I'm not in shape for that.
Easy fix. Just stop doing laundry. Yeah. You barely shower. I mean, why do you got to clean your clothes?
I don't have to. Yeah. Man, you have no idea how much that is thrown in my face. My shower comments.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That should be it. F the shower. That'll be our shirt, but
that's great. Oh yeah, I still think that's a podcast all-time highlight when You did that half marathon, PR'd, ate pancakes, mowed your lawn, and didn't shower.
I just kept doing dirty things. I just kept, there was no reason to shower because the next thing I was going to do, I was just going to get dirtier. So I'm like, I'm just riding this out. Let's explore this.
I understand
Yeah,
that.
thank you.
But then
I just
when
feel
it's
the need
capped
to.
off with climbing into bed, pre
It got late.
that's where
It
I
got
draw
late
the
on
line.
me. Hey, I probably washed the sheets the next day, I hope, but yeah.
Yeah,
And then
that's
I
when
went
you
down into the
drive up
laundry
there.
room and saw my PR, so
Okay.
endless
You know what
burpees.
I was thinking about all this like self-described anxiety and pressure we put on ourselves. Is this is what makes runners again so annoying and so unwelcoming and intimidating because there's always in running, there's always somebody faster, always somebody slower. And I would say to think it's fair to say just the times we generally run puts us in the higher percentile than most. So when people who are slower or don't have nearly as fast PRs hear us kind of like complaining and worrying and being of like
Whinging. We're
yeah,
whinging.
that can come off as just like we think we're better than them, or like if we're holding ourselves to this standard, we probably see them as substandard. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons that runners can be so
Insufferable.
off-putting. Yeah, insufferable. There you go. So what's the
And
moral of this
it's a good
story?
point, but at the same time, real quick, and not to get too deep into this, but I think it's just the standards we hold ourselves to. And I don't look at anybody else as slower. I mean, even if their times aren't great compared to what they would want to run, I'm still happy for everybody that runs the time that they run. It's just a weird thing that I get mad over myself not doing what I think I should be able to do. But somebody else running a time comparable, I mean, more power to them. I mean, and I hope they're happy with themselves running that time because they've done a great job and they've done an amazing thing. But I don't know. We just hold ourselves to certain standards and we do it. We're so selfish about it, I think, Charlie, aren't we? Aren't we selfish in the way we.
Oh, we're the worst in every way.
Yes, thank you.
You
We're the
know,
worst.
I'm glad this isn't an advice podcast because I don't know what I would say to anyone. I want to
I don't
tell us,
either.
I want to tell people, don't beat yourself up. But then at the same time, no, like go into that place of uncomfortability because that's the only way that you can get that real elation of surprising yourself.
Right.
You're never going to jump higher than you think that bar is. And it takes challenging yourself. And what is that phrase? If your goals don't scare you, they're not big enough. I think
Yeah,
there's
I like
gotta
that.
find that balance between the two. Like
Well, I
if you're losing
rambled.
sleep or just like it's affecting relationships and things because of this obsession, that's not healthy. But I think having a good challenging goal is also healthy too. So it's just
Yeah.
I have no advice, so I'm just acknowledging the tough balance to strike there.
Well, I rambled trying to explain it, but I think what I was trying to say is that a great time does not necessarily mean a great race for everybody. There are anybody can run whatever time they want and run a great race. I've run some pretty good times in the grand scheme of things that I've been just bitterly upset at myself and just angry over. And it's hard to have that perspective. But, you know, on the other hand, Charlie, is we don't really have to do any of this. You know, that's the other kind of
Yeah, this
insufferable
is a
thing about
hobby.
runners is it is. It's a hobby that we just turn into our this crazy obsession that nobody else gets. So that's on us.
Is. Well, Steve, despite having all that time, I did not look up the band for sure for this song, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. I want to
Okay.
close this one out with you remember how you were just wishing that that guy would come back?
Yeah.
That I think you may have even said, baby, come back.
A little bit of that yacht rock. I'm pretty sure it's Ace, A-C-E. Isn't that just
name
of that?
I don't know. Amazing.
You
amazing guess.
All on me. Yeah, that yacht rock sound, right?
Okay.
So let's
all
do that. Baby Come Back by Ace or somebody else. We don't know. We are the Running Buds. Send us an email, runningbudspodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook at Running Buds Podcast. And we're on Strava at Running Buds Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Give us a follow. I love to see everybody around the country and world runs on Strava. So,
yeah.
Come join the team, the Running Buds Nation. Did I just say that?
Oh, yeah, you did, but yeah.
All right, it's time to end this one. Baby, come back. Till next time. Bye, everybody.
See you soon.
Running Buds.